didn't record at all. Oh well. So we're going to start recording now. But we understand the idea of Melachot Shabbat as being our job. Sheshi Amim Tiasa Melacha, for 6 days work should be done. That's our job as creators of the world. We do work for 6 days, and then we rest, we stop, we make a point of stopping doing that work of what we're supposed to do in the world, our tikkun olam, just like Hashem created the world for 6 days and then rested on that seventh day from that creation. The question then is, what kind of creation is carrying? What does that mean to say, I'm not going to carry, I'm somehow resting from creating the world? And clearly it's a big deal, because if you look in Nach, you look at Yirmiyahu, considers Hotza'ah, carrying, as being the exemplar, it's the ultimate example of Chilul Shabbat. That's the ultimate example of the Malacha, of his creative work. This is a quote from Yirmiyahu. He's telling people, you got to shape up, or Hashem's going to destroy the Beit HaMikdash. Komar Hashem, Eli, God said to me, Halofa mat b'shar b'nei ha'am. Go stand out in the gates of the people. Asher yavo b'malchei Yudah. The king is traveling by. He's going to come in and out of the gates of Yerushalayim. And I want you to go stand there and go give this lecture in every gate of Yerushalayim. I'm not telling him, you tell the people. Shimu Devar Hashem, Malchei Yehuda, V'chol Yehuda. King of Israel, all of you Yehuda, listen to this. V'chol Yisrael Yerushalayim, everyone who lives in Yerushalayim, Haba'im Bashrim Ha'im Ha'ilah, goes through these gates. Kor Amar Hashem, thus saith the Lord, Hisham Ruben Achav Dechem, be very afraid. Your lives are in danger. Don't carry on Shabbos. In case you wondered whether carrying really is us on Shabbos, yeah, he says it out loud. This is Yirmiyahu. Don't carry on Shabbos. Don't carry through the gates of Yerushalayim. Right, that's carrying on Shabbos. You can't do that. Don't bring things out of your houses on Shabbos. And don't do any other malacha. You need to keep Shabbos holy, the way I commanded your ancestors. So what is it about Shabbos? What makes that the one of the most important melachot of Shabbat? This is the way Her says it, Janet, that Hotzah is, as he puts it, an affair of the social world. Holy of social life, of living not isolated in a community, in a state, not be represented more fully than the relation of the individual to the community. Hotzah is the idea that there exists a Rishud Yachid and a Rishud Rabim. There is my space, and there is the public space, and there is your space. But if the Isra of the other Malachot expresses the idea that man subordinates the use of his powers over matter to the will of God, right? I create within the physical world, and then I stop doing that as my Malacha. Isra of Hotzah may well express the idea of man placing his social life too under the dictates of the law of God. We're resting on Shabbat from is creating private spaces.
Is this a message? Is this like a COVID message? Who knows?
No. It's about making American Arab.
I know, but no. I know it's not your message, but is this Hashem's message?
That we need to respect private spaces?
I don't know. I know this is not relevant, but reconstruct our how we look at our social community and anyways, sorry, just to say that. I'm muting myself so I don't talk too much.
It's not meant to be a COVID sure, it's about creating
private. No, I know. I was just
for 6 days we create private space to define this is mine, this is yours, and this is outside. This is everybody's public, which are Rabbim. And then we recognize on Shabbos, those limits have been set. They are done, and we recognize those. And we say, we're not going to move anything. We're going to say, oh, I can go so far, but no further. In terms of carrying, I can still walk out there, but at least I'm recognizing that those exist. And again, the Torah only prohibits carrying within the Rishud Rabbim, or from Rishud Yachid into Rishud Rabbim. But Chazal extended that in two ways. Number one, we consider any area that is not technically Rishud Yachid, my own house, even though it's not, by the Torah law, a real Rishud Rabim, it's not completely public, like I said, classically a mavoy, an alleyway, or a chatzer, or a courtyard between houses, the hallway of an apartment building, even smaller streets that I'm, where I'm living on, those are not Rishud Rabim. But Chazal said, you're going to treat it like a Rishud Rabim. You can't carry there either. That's called a karmali. It's a halakhic term. and you can't carry there. And also, the edit that even if it's a Rishu Yachid, you can't carry there unless it's surrounded by a wall, by surrounded by halacha mechitzot. So that I can't carry, according to the Torah, I could carry my own front lawn. Chazal said, no. I'm sorry?
You could carry or you could not. Could.
Right.
Again, yeah, let's say you don't have a fence around your front lawn.
That's the point. The idea that you need a fence, a mechitza, around your Rishu Yachid is a gezerah. Because otherwise, Chazal figured you're going to make the mistake and you're going to go too far. But don't trust me on anything I say halakhically. And the fact that Chazal said it means you still have to obey. You can't go carrying on your front lawn. Again, the idea that you need that fence
okay.
around a Rishu Yachid is a gezerah Chazal. So what they did, they also created takana, which is a positive. Those are gezerah. Those are negative, right? We're going to extend the thou shalt nots into new areas, just to, as a siyag of the fence, keep you from going too far, because once you're going to carry into your lawn, you're going to carry into the street, you can carry into a public area. So we're going to say don't do that. That kind of the positive side is to make shabbos easier, which is that if we have all the inhabitants in a given area, that includes lots of different Rishu HaYachid, everyone has their own little house, their own little property, and the Carmelite, the common area between them, which again, is not a real Rishu HaYachid, a Rishu HaRabim rather. And they said that they can join together by basically having one common source of food, which in St. Louis is a box of matzah somewhere in the Kollel, as I understand. Then the whole area is now one single Rishu Yachid. And I can carry everywhere in it. And this mixing together of all the households is called an Eruv. Eruv literally means mixing. We still have the gezerah that Rishu Yachid that I created still needs a mechitza around it, still needs a wall around it. So usually we call that wall around that, we call that the Eruv. But that's not what Erev really means. The Erev is the joining together to create one common Rishu Yachid. The walls are important, and that's the hard part, which is why everyone only thinks about that, and the Erev committee spends all this time checking the little wires and poles that make up the wall that's around our singular community that we've created by being married, by mixing together all the households. So now we're going to look at David Bashevkin. He's talking about Masechet Eruvin. The whole Masechet in Gemara talking about making an Eruv, both in terms of how you, what counts as joining together, what do you do with people who, if they don't want to join with you in your community, that they forget to, how do you deal with that? And then also, how do you create the, what counts as a mechitza, what counts as a wall around this community? So this is the way he starts. Try to Eruvin, the portion of the Talmud we completed reading this week, several months ago, which deals with setting a clearly defined boundary for the purpose of carrying objects on Shabbat, is to the untrained eye as thrilling as a tax return, as comprehensible as the list of ingredients in your favorite highly processed junk food. That's a very Bashevkin kind of comment. Notorious for its difficulty, Yeshiva boys were wearing t-shirts instead of white button downs. They print ones that say stuff like, I survived Erevin. Tractate is chock full of geometric calculations so complex that they're often delivered with detailed illustrations that look more like an architectural blueprint than a religious text. That's fascinating, and you know, figuring out the geometry. What's the area of the square outside the inscribed circle? That ends up being a big problem in all of this. What counts in Erevin? That's what's complicated about it, but it's more than about the strings and the poles and the areas and all of that, because it's takana. Again, it's a positive injunction. It's a thing you're supposed to do, and it's ancient. It comes from the time of Shlomo, way back. This is Gemara in Eruvin. I quote here, Amar Rabbi Yehuda Mar Shmuel, B'shash Tiken Shlomo Eruvin. Didn't tell you that. Those are, the Gemara says, the two takanot that Shlomo Melech and his Beit Din from the time of Shlomo, those were set up that you should make an Eruv in a city and you should wash hands before eating bread. Yetsa bat kol amra b'ni im chacham libecha yismach libi gamani, quoting from Mishlei, that if you would do something that's smart, that I, Hashem, will be overjoyed with you. This is a really good idea. And this is the way the Rambam puts it. Why did Shlomo establish this takana that we should make an eruv? So people didn't make the mistake. That if they just had the original Torah law, people would say, look, I can go from my house into the street. I can carry that on Shabbos. And I can go into the shuk on Shabbos. That's okay, again, by Torah law. And I can bring from there into my courtyard. Then I would assume, I wouldn't realize that there's some kind of Israel Hotza at all. And I assume I could go from the city and I can bring it out into the fields. Bring them in. And I would assume that just like the shuk, the marketplace, is public in the sense that I and all my neighbors can go in there. It's open to everyone. Arehen, kesadot mebibarot, that's like open fields, which are real reshut harabim. Ramusha chetzerot bilvad, hen reshut yachid. I will say the chetzer is reshut yachid. This is reshut harabim, and there's no problem with going back and forth. So we may make this like kind of that we're going to establish this. We're going to make a sign that this is all one reshut, and you're allowed to carry it. I'm going to assume if I didn't have all of these other laws that I would end up thinking that Hotza is not a malach, it's not a problem. That's the idea of the Gezerah. This is the way Ben Tzion Buchman puts it when he's talking about sort of the philosophy of Eruv. This is a much older article from Akira from like early 90s. Shlomo, the ideal is king of Israel. But to unify the people around the base of Middash he had built, and thus instituted rabbinic enactments to strengthen the Malki Israel that he perfected. He's been create a state. Rama explains that people that understand the Muvot, that their alleyways, even the cities that are shared, were in fact Rashuda Yachid in the Torah set. Again, we hold that we don't let you carry in it. But from the Torah point of view, they're not Rashuda Arbim, not literally Rashuda Yachid. They're Carmelite, but they're not Rashuda Arbim. They did not understand they were a state of partnership with a thousand, theoretically millions, living in the walled city. In the truth, the people themselves are Baalim and responsible for the governance of the city. And that's what he says as a philosopher in Eruv, to say, you know, you're all partners in this. We are all living together. Underlying the section of Jewish law dealing with the interaction of man and society, the principle of this man's duty to create partnership with his fellow man. So the Torah says here, you know, part of your job is to create private spaces. The Eruv is that kind of to say you need to join your private spaces together. We need to create partnerships, promote their mutual interests to the organ of civilization. Shlomo's takana of Eruvin was intended to strengthen the awareness of this concept among his people. Rambam's language and his entire presentation of Eruvin makes clear that communities are expected to make Eruvin. Life in the ancient world would have been very difficult of carrying, was prohibited locally on Shabbos. The intent of the takana was not to prohibit it. Moreover, the process of making the Eruv would be something which kulam u'urim v'ochel echad v'kulanu. That the idea is that we're all joined together and we have one food, one meal for all of us. We don't separate from each other. That whole concept draws people into shutfut, into partnership together. Relationship that is, in fact, the goal of the mitzvah of the Torah and the intent of the takana. So again, the Eruv, from this way of putting it, is not in order to carry on Shabbos. That's a benefit. The purpose of Eruv is a takana, a positive thing in and of itself. We need to have an Eruv to join us all together. Part of the gezerah of not carrying in the street is to say, if you've done an Eruv, then you're allowed to carry in that, because then you're all part of one Rishu Yachid. Yeah.
This is the first time you're really getting into, by the words, into the issue of ownership.
Right. So that becomes a sort of a technical side of Rishud. What counts as ownership? Count this as Rishu Yachid or Rishu Rabim. And ownership there. Right. So basically, from the Torah point of view, the reshut here is what I have access to, what I can normally go into and out of. That counts as reshut yachid. Reshut rabim is where everyone can go into. So it's less a matter of ownership than of access, but those obviously related.
Well, Rabbi Berman talked about the idea that this halacha has a lot to do with ownership. But I'll wait till the end to talk to you about that.
Okay. Yeah, then with less focus on that.
Okay.
And it's a wonderful story in Yerushalmi and Eruvin, Gemara and Eruvin, Amri Yeshua, with name Ma'ariv Bechatzer, Ma'arivin Bechatzer. Yeshua, Rabbi Yeshua asked, why do we have an Eruv? Why do we establish an Eruv? The answer is, Mipnei Darche Shalom, in order to create peace. Right? We're not mentioning Shabbos here. Ma'aseh Be'isha Achad, there was a story, we're going to give you, here's a story. There was a woman, Shehaita Debuva Lachaverta, who used to slander her neighbor. Say, Dibara'a. Right? We always say bad things about her. The Shalcha Eruva, Gabe Bra. But they need to make an Erev. They decided to make an Erev, so she sends her little portion of food, because really, technically, everyone's supposed to donate their portion of food in there. What we end up doing is just donate to the Erev committee, and they establish it. Assuming everyone has given their dues to the Erev committee, right?
Yep.
Good. I'll keep pushing the steward, okay? This is a good thing. Okay, we're all part of this. So she sends food to this lady that she hates, and her, she's always bad-mouthing, but she's going to organize the Erev. So she sends an Erev with her son, gets some food over at their house. So this lady that she's always bad-mouthing takes the Erev from the son, hugs him and kisses him. She's just overjoyed. What a great thing we're doing. Ataba amar kume ime. And so he goes home and tells his mother, look what just happened to me. He gave me a hug and a kiss. That was okay back then, you know, before social distancing. Amra, and so he says, Heichen habit rachmile, lo habit yadana. She loves me and I didn't even know it. And I keep saying bad things about her. We'll be friends again. So they became best friends. Thank you.
Sorry.
So the Erev makes people best friends again. How do you say that these laws create shalom, their ways of pleasant? That's an Erev. And there's another fascinating article by Charlotte von Robert, who is a professor of Jewish studies at Stanford, who likes looking sort of the political consequences of halacha. I have no idea how firm she is, but it all sounds pretty reasonable. That points out that the Eruv idea is about a neighborhood that we have to deal with all of our neighbors. Everybody has to be part of this, even the non-Jewish ones, which is one of the few places in halacha where we explicitly are told, okay, we need to deal with a non-Jewish neighbor. We can't be insular. And she has a whole article called Political Symbols in the Eruv, which you can click on there and get to. The article deals with the relationship between insider, outsider, between Jews and non-Jews that the Erev designs. What is of interest here is not primarily the general relationship between Jews and non-Jews, about which much has been written, but specifically the residential relationship within the neighborhood. Lucha assumes that we're actually living right next door to non-Jews. How are we going to deal with them? That is, the non-Jew is not just a generic type of other, but is a next-door neighbor. The questions to be considered here are what kind of neighborhood and what kind of neighborhood relations the rabbinic text construct. So for instance, the Mishnah B'Tremel, quote, has a problem, right? We don't want to be sharing food with non-Jews, right? We're not gonna socialize with them, but what does that mean in terms of an Eruv? How can I have an Eruv with my non-Jews?
Are you still Rocky?
There is Rocky, established
Rocky protecting us public from space. Our neighbors.
Yeah. Dogs have a lot of problem with this concept. It's either my space or somebody else's space. And they can't get this sharing idea. But we can't have the non-Jew be part of our Eruv. We're not sharing food with them. So the Tosefta solves this by asking the non-Jewish neighbor to rent their property to the Eruv, to the community of the Eruv. So we give them money. And this way, the Tosefta puts it, Israel notin reshut and mevatel reshut. Israel can join that within their property, and go up with mevatel, which is luckily, if you're not part of the Erev, you can mevatel your property, say it's not mine, it's part of the Erev now, and you can still, everyone else can still carry there. But not with a non-Jew, I say yishkar that doesn't apply until they actually rent. You go to the mayor of University City, right, and rent the streets from them. And this is the way Professor Von Robert puts it. The act of symbolic renting, introduced in the Septa, however, allows the rabbinic Jews in the neighborhood to establish an Avery community, and the symbolic unification of the Jewish neighborhood can proceed. One might think about this ritual innovation as a unification of the residential neighborhood with a difference. Jews by food, and Jews and non-Jews by the monetary transfer. Thus, they're all potentially part of the same project of forming a collective ritual intent. We're all working together here. Rabbinic theorizing of the Arab community, of the ritual system of the Arab, can be read as a powerful way to think about the importance of neighborhood in conceiving community. This, I would add, has particular importance in a diaspora situation. That is, a nationalist concept of collectivity. In other words, if we're all living in our own land, this is just us and we're all us here, assumes sovereign control over territory. My people, my land. This control functions to guarantee the construction or imagination of national identity by the population living within the borders of that territory. Which is, professors speak for, I own this, everyone living here is us, and anyone who doesn't belong here isn't part of us, doesn't belong living here. The Arab does construct a collective identity with respect to space, but it does so in the absence of having control or sovereignty over the place, space. This is our neighborhood, but lots of people who aren't us live here as well. The contrary maps a collectivity symbolically into space of which it does not claim control, political or otherwise. It maneuvers around the existing structures of control. I would suggest the Arab offers a powerful model of territoriality without sovereignty. That's what an Arab is. And as such, would have much to offer the current discussions about diaspora cultures. How can we be part of a larger community? And so David Bashevkin quotes Von Robert and sees this as a model for social interaction. The idea is that we need our private spaces. We have an obligation to create private spaces where things are private, acknowledge that there exist public spaces, that there are communities in which we join together our public spaces, but even that public space, there are other people who aren't part of us are part of that as well. And we interact in limited ways, and that's a positive way to live. And then he's gonna push it to the internet. Perhaps more than anywhere else, our online discourse reflects a world where Rishuta Rabim and Rishuta Yechid, public and private identities, have become befuddled. To live in social media is to live in a world where our community insists on sovereignty. When I say something on the internet, I think I'm talking to my friends. And therefore, I would consider it private. But that's not true, because everyone sees it, and everyone else thinks that I'm only talking to my friends. Therefore, what you said is unacceptable. Therefore, you need to submit to my rules, because this is my space. Arab envisions a different sort of world. Instead of sovereignty, we create community with symbolism and purpose. Instead of trying to own them, the others. Arab imagines a discourse where you can be right or wrong without infringing on the shared humanity of the public square. And that's what the Arab allows us to do. We establish our community without sovereignty. I don't own this. This is my neighborhood. And then there's a wonderful quote. This is Rabbi Eli Fisher, who lives in Woods Inn. Who's talking? Everyone know Michael, is it Professor Chabon? Chabon? Chabon.
Novelist.
Yes. Interesting novelist. Very Jewish and very anti-Jewish.
Yeah.
At the same time, famously gave a commencement speech at Hebrew Union College where he talks about how terrible Jewish singularity is and he hopes his children all intermarry. So this is Fisher talking about Chabon. Rabbi singles out the Shabbat Erev for ridicule three times in his speech. For him, an Erev is just another boundary, another way for Jews to mark who's in and who's out. But the word literally means mixture or combination. The legal theory behind it is that many different private and semi-private domains can be combined to one single household, so one can carry things from one to another on Shabbat. For an Erev involves negotiating with all those, including the non-Jews and non-observant Jews, who share that space. And the walls of the Arab are generally not walls at all. The way we construct an Arab is specifically not with a massive fence that nobody can get through. Comprised only of posts and wires, and the premise that two posts and a lintel form a doorway. The area of circumscribed community with walls that are entirely doors. That's what an Arab is, that kind of Arab is supposed to be. And then the Reshevkin points out that Masechet Erevin is where we learn the idea of Elu ve'elu divrei Elokim Chayim. That's where the quote is, right? This is Gemara in Erevin. So Shanim Nechlu Beit Shammai Beit Hillel. For 3 years, Beit Shammai Beit Hillel were arguing about some halachic question. Hello, Amrim halach montenu. Hello, Amrim halach montenu. One side said no, the walls like us. The other side said the walls like us. That's a bat kol v'amru, and a voice comes from heaven and says, "Elu v'elu divrei Elokim chayim." Both these are the words of the living God. But you're right, and you're right. And the Rebbe says, "They can't both be right." Rebbe says, "Oh, you're right too." Tanarabanan, and another example of this, Shtei Shanim Mechsa, for 2.5 years of that Nechlu Beit Sham Beit Hillel. What's their argument? They have a lot of arguments, Beit Hillel Beit Sham. But here's one of them. Halo Amrim, Noach Lola Adam Shalom Nivra, Yoter Mishan Nivra. Is it better for man to be created or not? One side, it would have been better, Noah, easier, if he hadn't been created. Halo Amrim, Noach Lola Adam Shalom Nivra, Yoter Mishalom Nivra. No, better for to have created man. That's another Elu Ve'elu Divrei Elokim Chayim. And the way Rav Shevkin puts it, is it better to be a global citizen or a member of the tribe? Is it better to have not been created and remain connected to the source of all humanity? Keep our divinity that being created as a human being is to be an individual? Would I rather not be created? But I've been created to live in our fraction divisive world. And with most Jewish things, if the question is this or that, the answer is yes. These are the words of the living God. Be alive, be living, to have some modicum of engagement in the ultimate chayim, life itself, to engage in those kind of negotiations. Yes, I was created, you were created, we have to deal with other people. Connect, preserve, unify and divide, be joined while also remaining separate. Erevin shows how to build this complex notion of self and community. Through the doorways of the Erev, we can see the other and they can see us. And we peer for the synthetic divisions of the Erev, we're reminded that no matter which side you may find yourself, these are the words of the living God. And that's his hope that we can make America an Erev as well, that we can keep our private spaces, keep our communities as played by the Erev, and keep the greater community, be part of the greater society as well. With that, have a great Shabbos.
Yeah, thank you.
Shabbos.